Dominic Steele, and how might churches reopen claims of dispute over coercion of conscience, declarations from Old Testament prophets? Our guests are the Executive Director of Gospel Coalition Australia, Arcos Balog, John McLean, who's Acting Principal of Sydney's Presbyterian Christ College, and the Minister of St George North Anglican Church, Phil Colgan. Australia is going through a third wave of COVID, and half the country is in lockdown. We're told that freedoms will return, at least partially, when vaccination rates reach 70% double dose, and even more when they reach 80%. But what will happen for churches? There's not a lot to go on, but at a news conference last Monday, the Premier of New South Wales, Gladys Berejiklian, gave this clue.
Well, the important thing to note is when we get to 70% double dose, the freedoms that we'll be experiencing will be those who are fully vaccinated. We know that the risk of having or developing severe illness is reduced when you're fully vaccinated. The risk of you getting the virus or passing it on to others is severely reduced when you're vaccinated. But also at 70% double dose, there'll still be restrictions in place. You'll have to check in. You'll have to demonstrate you've been vaccinated. You'll have to demonstrate social distancing. You'll have to make sure that in certain settings you're wearing a mask. So know that at 70% double dose, life will be much better than what it is today if you're vaccinated.
Now, a couple of lines stood out. The freedoms that we will be experiencing will be for those who are fully vaccinated. And life will be much better than what it is today if you're vaccinated. She's quite clear that her short-term vision for New South Wales is that at the 70% double-dose vaccination level, there'll be two levels of freedom in the society. And just taking her words at face value, I think we could expect that double vaccination would be a requirement of attending many venues and potentially including churches on a Sunday in New South Wales, perhaps as soon as 6 weeks' time. Phil Colgan, can we start with you? Do you think it's actually going to come to that? Or is the Premier talking tough, but actually when push comes to shove, in terms of making it law, she won't do that for churches?
Well, we don't know, Dominic, and we're not able to guess the mind of the Premier on this. My personal view is I would be surprised if a vaccine passport was put in place for churches, especially once we get to that 80% point. It might be for a brief period for the 70%, but especially for the 80%, I would be surprised. It's never actually even been articulated by any one official. And I think that is important for how we talk about it. I think it means you don't aggressively oppose something that hasn't actually been officially proposed. Now is the time for gentle lobbying and persuasion, which I believe church leaders are involved in. There can be a place for asserting our rights, we will stand against this or that sort of thing, but you do that reluctantly, and I would hope only on gospel grounds and godliness grounds. So I suppose my point is it might come to that. My view is it probably won't. I'd be surprised if they did, but we shouldn't act as if it is going to happen, which is been part of the issue in recent days with some of these bold statements on this topic. Yeah.
Arcos, if we could come to you, because you've got an essay about to go up on the Gospel Coalition Australia site, Vaccine Passports and the Coercing of Conscience. And you kindly sent me a draft copy yesterday, but in it you argue vaccine passports are not a religious freedom issue for Bible-believing Christians. What's your thesis there?
Yeah, thanks so much, Dominic. I guess there's a couple of issues that I want to tease out. Firstly, some declarations or the Ezekiel declaration talks about how coercing of conscience, conscience should never be coerced, that it's always wrong to violate a person's sincerely held conscience. And I guess looking at it from a biblical perspective, God puts governments in place not to coerce people's beliefs about God. So there should be a freedom that people have to believe what they want about God according to their conscience. But at the same time, government has been put there by God to coerce some consciences, particularly consciences of people that want to do the wrong thing. So, for example, if you believe that God is calling you, or, you know, to take a topical example, Allah is calling you to go down to the local supermarket and stab people, then the government is very much involved in coercing that conscience of that person. So conscience is never inviolate. It's never absolute. So it depends on how the issue was framed. Now, for it to be a religious freedom issue, I guess a number of things need to take place. A, the Bible would need to speak very directly to the issue of vaccine passports and vaccinations. Obviously, the Bible doesn't. And the second thing that needs to happen is that the government regulation would need to somehow impede our ability to practice our faith. And as far as I can tell, the only place that that might happen is if vaccine passports came in such that you couldn't go to church unless you had a vaccine passport. I think when it comes to religious freedom grounds, we're on more certain grounds there than just, you know, as a Christian, I don't want to have a vaccine passport.
So the discussion at the moment, if it's not a religious freedom issue, what is it?
Yeah, I think it's more a political issue. So there's other grounds of conscientious objection. But I think we need to be careful, particularly Christian leaders and pastors need to be careful when the Bible doesn't speak directly to it, to treat it as a disputable matter over something that Christians are free to disagree with. So, for example, I would not want to see a pastor standing up in their pulpit and with this, using the authority of the Bible saying that vaccine passports are against God's word. I don't think the Bible gives us the freedom to say that or gives us the reason to say that. What we can say is that as a Christian, according to what my understanding of vaccine passports are, I might not like them. I might think they're problematic for X, Y, and Z political reasons. It's more of a jagged line issue. We might bring in all sorts of biblical principles to discuss it, but a direct line saying that this is directly against God's word, once for all revealed to the saints, I don't think we have the ability to say that as Christians.
John McLean, do you agree with Arcos there?
I think so. Maybe there's a few things I'd like to tease out a little bit. So perhaps if I can make a few comments and Arcos might want to come back on some of them. So first of all, I think to go back to what Phil said, we've got to wait and see what happens. And it's very easy to get, overexcited when we don't know the details. And so this kind of discussion, we are talking about something that's still fairly abstract. We're not quite sure how it'll operate. I think our first responsibility, our first concern should be looking generally at how this is going to affect the community. And any sort of vaccine passport has the potential to be unfairly discriminatory across the board. And I think we need to watch out for that. We may or may not have much influence on that, but at least, you know, in our concern for society, we should be concerned about that. And so it could, if people have not been able to access vaccines, but then are excluded, that seems on the face of it unfair. So I think we need to think about that first. It would become, in my mind, a freedom of religion issue if it's applied in some way that unfairly discriminates against religious activities versus other activities. Now, I realize that's not always easy to know how to calibrate it, because going to a church or a mosque or a synagogue is different to going to a cinema or a cafe. And so, you know, exactly what rules you put in place for one or the other will vary. But if it looks as if something is being placed on regulations really limiting religious activities, then I think there's a case for saying that is a matter of freedom of religion, and that's where I'd want to protest. Whether it's a matter of conscience, I think, is another step again. And then whether it's a matter of coercion is even further step. So I think there are some people who don't want to receive a vaccine because they're concerned about some moral issues about the production of the vaccines. My observation is that's a very small group who really hold to that. But there are some people who have that view.
It's a very tiny percentage, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Whereas I think for most people who don't want to receive a vaccine, it's a judgment they're making about the relative risk of the infection versus the risk of taking the vaccine and the benefit of taking the vaccine. And I just don't think that's a matter of conscience. It's a matter of freedom, and people shouldn't be forced to do something to their own body that they don't want to do. But if they make a risk judgment, you know, that they're not going to take it, then there could be some consequences. And it's on the government, first of all, and then the church to try and balance up, you know, the judgment those people have made and what consequences might flow and how to do that as fairly as possible.
Phil, what's your take on what Arcos and John have said?
I think we're in substantial agreement. I agree with the point Arcos started with, that the issue of vaccine passports more widely is a political issue. And like many issues, you can agree or disagree with the government of the day, and you can go through appropriate channels to voice your opinion. But just disagreeing with the government isn't a reason to not be bound by the government. So I've got all sorts of issues with the idea of vaccination passports in general, or issues is probably too strong a word, questions where I'm not certain that they actually achieve anything other than act as a carrot or stick to encourage people to get vaccinated, which in and of itself is morally questionable in my view, that making people make medical decisions on the basis of whether you can go to a cafe or not. I think there are international UN resolutions about not coercing people into medical treatments and so forth. But anyway, so there's those sort of questions. But they're questions of vaccine passports in general. John made the point of it becomes a matter of freedom of religion if, for instance, attending church is being treated differently to attending a cinema or a cafe or something like that. And I think that's right. But even if it is consistent and churches are treated the same as cinemas, say, and it's not a freedom of religion issue, I still question whether the government has the right to impose on churches something we don't accept. I think it's really important to note that all of our acceptance of government limitations to date, I consider to have been voluntary, that the government doesn't have the right to forbid people meeting as Christians, and we have chosen to accept and comply, rightly, in my view. But there might come a time, like with a vaccine passport for me, where I would say the government requires that, but we are now going to stand up and say no, even though it is consistent with what they're requiring for cinemas and so forth, simply because if depending on many other factors which we're not aware of yet.
Yeah, I think the principle drawn from passages like Romans 13 and 1 Timothy 2, and also in the book of Acts, where the apostles get told not to preach Jesus anymore, and their response is, no, we must obey God rather than men. I think this could be potentially one of those situations where the government does say to us, you do need a vaccine passport to go to church. We look at passages like Hebrews 10:25, which say, do not cease meeting together. And then at that point, we say to the government, look, we think this is an unfair burden on our religious practice, on our ability to live out our faith. And at that point, we can push back and say, yeah, I think this becomes a religious freedom issue. And ideally, according to international law, so Article 18 of the UN's international ICCPR, which says that freedom of conscience should only be limited where it's necessary for the public good. And so it should be on government. If they're going to bring in a vaccine passport, for example, for all churches, then the onus should be on government to say this is why it's necessary, not just a nice to have or it's a reasonable thing, but a necessary thing to uphold public good. And as churches, I think we can hold government to account in that way.
Phil, could I just jump back to you? Did you say this would be a line where you would engage in civil disobedience or lead your people to civil disobedience?
I would not go that far, simply on the grounds that we don't know what the rules are, and there's many unanswered questions for me on this yet. So I would not want to be bound in that sense by anything I say at something like this at this point. But I think there are all sorts of questions to ask about this. I'm not yet convinced medically that there is actually any good grounds for vaccine passports in general. I'm the statistics seem to say that vaccinated and unvaccinated people alike share COVID, and the difference a vaccine makes is in the impact it has on you when you receive it. So I'm not yet convinced that there's a reason why vaccinated people need to be protected from unvaccinated people on this, but that may be proven to me. So when that information becomes clear, I may change my view. But I do think in general, I cannot ever see a time where I would say that mandating vaccination for attendance at church is acceptable to me, as opposed to strongly encouraging and so on and so forth. But I can't ever see a time where I would deny someone access to fellowship on the grounds of their vaccination status.
Let me put the case. I'm not sure I'm convinced of the case, but I think this is the case for vaccine passports or part thereof. Even if the risk of infection is not changed at all by a vaccination, and I'm not sure that's clear that it's not at all, but let's grant that. It is very clear that the health impact of infection is very reduced by having a vaccination. And what I think the big motivation of everything that the government has done so far, the overwhelming motivation has actually been to protect the health system. And so there could be a case that even if people who are vaccinated are likely to still infect one another while they're mixing at, you know, cinema, church, the football, whatever, but they won't get as sick and so they won't end up in hospital as much, so they won't overwhelm the health system, but add that unvaccinated people into there and it might. That would be the case. That would be the argument, I think. I agree with you. I'm not sure it's clear, and I've been actually trying to talk to some people who have more expertise in this area and say, is it really a legitimate public health measure, or is it really an incentive, which is what you were saying, it's a carrot. And if it is an incentive, primarily an incentive for vaccination, I think it's very problematic to curtail people's human rights to incentivize vaccination when it's not evidence-based for public health itself. But that said, can I just go on to the other thing about the civil disobedience question? I think there's several other things that the government has instituted over the last few months that haven't got a lot of strong evidence about them. I mean, curfews being the most obvious. Now, curfews haven't affected churches particularly, but I'm not sure that it's, I'm not sure I want to buy into the principle that that we treat government decisions as illegitimate and therefore we're going to disobey them, even if we're not convinced that they've got a good basis. Even if passports come in, I'm not, and we don't think they're well founded, I'm still not sure that it's legitimate for Christians to disobey the law there.
Maybe we could put aside the mandatory question, and let's just, for the premise of the discussion going forward, assume the government doesn't say you must as an individual church. Therefore, we've got to decide as church leaders, what do we want to do in our context? And I'm noticing different denominations seem to be charting different ways forward to resolve this question. In the Sydney Anglicans, the word seems to be that the decisions we made primarily on a local level, although they might get central advice. I'm hearing a National Assembly is called in the Presbyterians to wrestle with this issue. John, how's it playing out in the Presbyterians?
Well, you're right. A National Assembly has been called. The proposal that Assembly is going to consider hasn't yet been released. So we don't quite know what we're going to be debating or exactly what terms we're going to be debating. But I'd hope it may in the end not be perhaps that different to what you've suggested, that there'll be some principles articulated, but left to local congregations and the leadership of local congregations to work out how to implement them. And I mean, the other complication for us as a national denomination is every state is going to have different regulations. How it plays out in Queensland and Victoria and New South Wales will probably be quite different. I don't think the General Assembly of Australia will be in a position to make specific comments. I think it'll have to be fairly principial.
Right. Now, as a local church pastor, I want people to come to my church. It seems to me the best way to get them to come to my church is if they're not frightened of coming to my church. How do I get people to come to my church? What should I do? What are you advising people? Well, let's start with you, John. What would you be advising your local minister?
Well, we've been talking about this as our local leadership without coming to any conclusion. I mean, I think that the voluntary, availability of vaccine passports is probably the most difficult pastoral situation for churches, because there'll be a group of people who absolutely object to vaccine passports at all, and will be very upset with any implementation of them. There'll be another group of people who are very nervous about mixing with people who aren't vaccinated. Now, both those sides, you may or may not agree with the reasons they've got, and you may think you want to criticise both of them. But I think the pastoral reality is there will be probably both those groups, and the proportion of those groups is going to change a lot, I imagine, between congregation and congregation. So I actually think this is going to be a really tricky issue, and so we want to try and be as gentle and kind, as understanding and patient with each other as we have these kind of conversations, because I think it's going to be hard. We're still working it out in our congregation even to begin with, but I guess the first step we've started to think about taking is at least flagging to people that this is an issue that's coming, and trying to help people at least not be surprised by it, and be able to get some conversation happening amongst the congregation and with the congregation and the leadership over the next few weeks. So at least we know where we stand if and when.
Arcos?
Yeah, look, I don't have much to add to what John said. I can see how it's a real issue for many people that have strong feelings about this, people that are not vaccinated, or people who are vaccinated and don't want to mix with people that aren't vaccinated. It's going to be a real wisdom call. So I second everything that John said, that it's going to be a pastoral issue. I can't add much more than that.
So, I mean, I guess even just what you said there, Arcos, just made me think, one thing that will help us is for the doctors in our congregations and other medical experts in wider denomination as well, as with vaccinations themselves, to give us some as good information as we can get, so we can try and communicate that to people and say, hopefully to be able to say, look, there is no great risk.
Mm. Phil?
Perhaps it's because I'm the local pastor of the three of us that I've probably got a lot more thoughts on this one.
I thought I'd go to you last there.
Thank you. I think there's a few really big points to make here. The first is we need to be teaching our people theologically about this and stopping it just being a medical discussion or a science discussion. We need to be teaching people theologically about this. So to give you an example, I actually think one of the major issues that I see Christians struggling with on this is not whether to have a vaccine or not. It's how to treat people who disagree with you. That's actually the theological issue our people need to be taught on. So I did a session after our evening congregation a few weeks ago to talk about vaccines and so forth. And that I shared that I'm getting my double vaccination and I support people getting the vaccine and so forth. But I then challenged people about speaking with grace and gentleness about people who disagree and who are hesitant about vaccines, and even not using pejorative language like anti-vaxxer and instead talking about them being hesitant and, showing grace and love. Or even the way many Christians I saw on social media talking about protesters and talking about them like they're stupid and nasty and full. Some may be, but others are driven by fear and need to show grace and respect even with people you disagree. So there's an example of making sure we teach it theologically and about godliness rather than just get caught up in the, as important as it is, the medical information and so forth. But in terms of then coming back to church and so forth, I think we've got to walk lines here, which will mean you don't keep everyone happy. And in my experience of 20 years of pastoral leadership, if I'm not keeping everyone happy, I'm probably doing all right, is my sort of view. Whereas if you keep everyone's happy, there's something wrong. You're not following the scriptures. maybe that's just my cantankerous way, but anyway.
You're probably just not listening to people, because there will be someone who's not unhappy anyway.
Exactly. That's right. You're probably just deaf. Yeah. So I think we need to go out of our way to show people church is safe and so, as safe as it can be. And I think in particular in the way we deal with outsiders there. So, for instance, for our church, when we get to the point of opening up our midweek kids program, which is very much outward focused, we may go over and above and actually call on people to go beyond what they're comfortable a bit with, to say, no, all our leaders are vaccinated and so forth, just because it's actually about making sure there's no stumbling blocks to the gospel in our interaction with the world. Whereas when I'm talking to Christians about coming to church, I want to challenge Christians and say, look, safety is not the only factor. It is a factor, and we're doing these things to make sure church is a safe environment. But I worry some Christians seem to be no different to a secular atheist view of safety, that is the only factor, that unless there's 0% risk, it's legitimate for you to stay away from fellowship. I want to say, no, risk management and health is only one issue you should take into account. There are other factors, not least God's command to meet together, that should not be set aside lightly. And 0% risk is just not possible, even without COVID. So even in that language, you want to make sure we talk about reasonableness and rather than 0%. So I think there's an underlying theological issue here, by the way, which perhaps we haven't dealt with well pre-COVID, that we're going to have to now teach our people on, which is actually the priority of Christian fellowship and it being worthy of risk. So if anecdotally, many ministers talk about even pre-COVID, people thinking 2 Sundays in 4 is good attendance at church, you know, and so forth. Well, that suggests to me there is a massive ungodliness epidemic across evangelical churches. God commands us to meet together. It's essential for Christian life. And so I think as we communicate to our people, as opposed to the world, as I said before, we need to teach in such a way that we say honouring the command of God to meet together, prioritising Christian fellowship, is worth some risk. There's a balance, and not being unnecessarily cavalier, but the balance is not 0% risk. And we've got to teach our people on this theologically, not just and aiming to challenge their godliness, rather than just, oh, it's okay if you decide not to come back to church because there's a 2% chance of... I just sort of think, how would you talk to a Christian in a persecuted country at that point? They would say, well, there's a fear of jail. I'll come to church. It's certain they're going to kill me if I go today. Okay, we won't meet together. You know what I mean? The line is not 0% where you say fellowship is worth giving up at that point. The line is somewhere different to that. And that's how we've got to teach our people. We need to make sure these discussions are actually saying, hey, yeah, understand some reticence. There is some risk. There's more risk than there was pre-COVID coming to church. We're doing these things, but it's still worth coming to church. Recognizing there might be a certain small percentage where it's legitimate for them to say, I'm staying away because of underlying health concerns and so forth. Yeah. So my big challenge there is, if I
take that point and think, yes, I want to do that, I've still got the whole issue of communicating to the non-Christian suburb around me that this is a safe place, of whom now we're sitting as a suburb at 80% first vaccinations, and so that'll go up from now. And so most of whom have been vaccinated, the non-Christians around me, and will want to know that it is safe for them to come. So it's not just the after-school kids club that wants to know that. It's the potential non-Christian on a Sunday that wants to know that. So do I run one service that's badged vaccination, one service that's badged vaccination optional? What would you do,
Phil? I wouldn't do that. And there's theological reasons why I wouldn't, because church is for the insider, not the outsider, first of all. It's to be intelligible and open and available to the outsider. But there are some things we run for the outsider. Church is primarily for the gathering of God's people, and there should not be a dividing wall between them. Now, you may you may decide to do this for a time and disagree with me and so forth, and you may decide to have an old style evangelistic service that where you have the higher bar, but I wouldn't want to do that for church.
Akos, what's your view there?
Yeah, look, I see both sides of the story. I see what you're saying, Dominic, in terms of having different services that are badged differently depending on vaccine status. I think there's merit with that. Yeah, but I also hear Phil's point about the church being for the insider, and so we just need to be careful that we don't put unnecessary barriers there to people coming along. So I think there's a real conversation to be had there. At this point, I don't have any strong views on it.
John?
Oh, I think the way Phil both set out the kind of conversations we want to have, which is going to be a mixture of helping people understand what the reality is and what the real risks are and aren't, and also helping them think through what their Christian responsibilities are. I think that those kind of conversations, and then the idea that when we meet as church, we're meeting as God's people, so what I'm saying is I'd go along with, I think what Phil said,
but
makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I could see where if you were having a particular event where you were aiming to bring outsiders and that's who the audience was and you made the judgment and in your area, people were so nervous about, you know, wanting vaccine guarantees that you needed to give them that, then perhaps you would. But, I wouldn't want to do that for church generally unless there was some absolutely compelling reason to do so.
So we've got 6 gingerbread nights scheduled in last week of November, first week of December. It sounds like you might for them.
I think that's right. A bit like the
kids ministry that Phil was talking about, you could – at least for some of them, say we'd like to make sure that everyone who's helping with these nights or these particular nights has been vaccinated, so we can just say that we can guarantee that to your friends.
Mm. Now, let's come to this Ezekiel declaration, which has had a fair bit of airtime the last few days. Your take on it, Phil?
I think back to where we started, Dominic. I think it just has misread the times a little bit. There is a place for Christians asserting rights. It's not like that is always wrong, but to do it preemptively and somewhat aggressively, which is how I read it, I may be wrong, but that's how I read it. When, as far as I could tell, there hadn't been any government body in Australia that even proposed the idea at that point. For churches, seemed to a little bit unnecessary at this point, in my view. And I think Arcos's point before is a helpful one, which is the vaccine passport question more widely is a discussion that still needs to be had, and there might be some legitimate reasons for it. For instance, for international travel or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Arcos, the Ezekiel declaration?
Yeah, as I mentioned at the start, I just have concerns about the way certain elements of it, particularly this idea that conscience must never be violated. I think that's a very simplistic understanding and a secular understanding of how conscience works, and I don't think it's backed up by the Bible. But also this idea that it seems to be landing on a biblical position on vaccine passports, which I just don't see the Bible going anywhere near that. Obviously, there are concerns, and John raised concerns earlier as to what this might mean for wider society. But I think we need to be careful by saying, thus says the Lord, vaccine passports are a bad thing. I don't think we should be in the pastors and Christian leaders should be in the business of binding Christian conscience on a disputable issue like a vaccine passport. And my fear is that the Ezekiel declaration goes very close to that, if not actually does that.
So, Dominic, can I just say something on that, though? I think it, just because I don't agree with it, doesn't mean we should condemn people who do or anything like that. Christians can differ on this. Some Christians may view it differently. I go back to what I said before about speaking with grace and gentleness and respect towards people with whom we disagree being actually, from my view, the major godliness issue in this whole thing. And so in there, I, other Christians may be viewing Australia differently and so forth. Even if I disagree with them, I respect their right to do it. Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to call them anything for doing it, if I can put it that way.
And when the committee that I was that I'm part of had made a written response to the Ezekiel Declaration, we did our very best to try and have that kind of spirit about it, to acknowledge what we agreed with in there and to say where we disagreed. And, you know, I think we raised some serious concerns, but tried to do it in a way that didn't raise the temperature of the discussion, but tried to moderate the temperature.
Final word from you, Arcos?
Oh, look, I think vaccine passports and so forth are an issue that Christians can and do need to talk about. I fully agree with Phil that the way we talk about it is going to be vital. Particularly, there are a lot of strong opinions out there, but and that's fine. But we need to do it in a way, a Romans 14 way, where we welcome each other in the name of Christ, even though we disagree on these secondary matters.
Thanks so much for talking to us this afternoon. My guests on The Pastor's Heart, the Executive Director of the Gospel Coalition Australia, Arcos Balog, John McLean, who's the Acting Principal of the Presbyterian Church's Christ College, and also the Minister of St. George North, Phil Colgan, online with us as well. You've been watching, listening to The Pastor's Heart, and we'll look forward to your company next Tuesday afternoon.
Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.